Hello, I'm Natasha Moore, and welcome to the Synergies podcast series, brought to you by UCL Grand Challenges and UCL Public Policy. Synergies is an essential guide to what happens when academics reach out beyond their discipline to answer complex real-world problems. Each podcast brings together two experts in the same field, but with different approaches, to explore the possibilities and occasional pitfalls of an interdisciplinary world. This week I'm joined by Hugh Montgomery, a professor of intensive care medicine at UCL, and Peter Cox, a professor of climate system dynamics at the University of Exeter. They've worked together on the Second Lancet Commission on Health and Climate Change. The first report came out in 2009 and concluded that climate change is the biggest threat to global health of the 21st century. The second concluded that climate change is a medical emergency.
For years, we've witnessed the effects of climate change in extreme weather, higher temperatures, rising seas, threatening landscapes, wildlife, agriculture, industry, and water supplies, and of course, people's health. But now we have a clearer picture than ever of exactly how much and in what ways climate change is affecting the health of humans around the world.
That was a clip from the Lancet Climate Commission website. Hugh, if I can turn to you first, you know all about medical emergencies, but how does climate change affect health?
Well, it affects health in a number of ways, and it's been largely misunderstood. There are probably at least 13 specific sort of points of action of climate on health, and they range from indeed heat stress, lack of heat tolerance, inability to exercise outdoors. They spread through extreme weather events to loss of habitation, loss of crops and starvation and so forth. And they spread through to the social, i.e. mass migration and the wars and conflicts that come from migration and lack of resource. So overall, these are really very major impacts that are spread all around the world to which no one is immune.
Peter, what role did you play in the commission?
That's a good question. So I'm a climate scientist. So what I normally do is to look at climate predictions, work out, say, how much warmer the globe's going to get, how much rainfall is going to change. What we did in this that was, on the face of it, very simple. So I feel I should have worked out how to do this before I spoke to Hugh, but I didn't. Which is basically to say, well, let's just care about climate change where people are and where vulnerable people are. So instead of thinking about the area mean global warming that you normally hear about, the sort of 2-degree target, let's think about exposure of the elderly to heat waves, which is known to be very damaging for health. And so you get a totally different perspective on what climate change, as is being predicted, means for people, which has been very helpful for me. And scary.
And scary? Mm. Scary in what way?
Two ways. One is what we find is that there's a sort of unfortunate coincidence between what's happening to populations, what's happening to climate. So, for example, give a simple example. We all want to live around the coasts and sea levels are rising, storm surges are increasing. So we have demographic changes and socioeconomic changes that tend to move us into dangerous situations rather than away from them. And the other was a scariness of working with Hugh, actually. Because what climate scientists have been taught over the years is not to be advocates for any position. The mantra is policy relevant, not policy prescriptive. And of course, doctors are writing prescriptions all the time. And so this was a very different perspective to me. And initially it was, I don't really want anything to do with this. It's going to undermine my scientific objectivity. And then I realised I didn't have any left anyway.
So once you discovered that it was slightly less scary than you thought, actually, to think like that, what did that bring you in terms of how you approach this subject?
I think it's always useful when, I mean, I've been working in climate science for many, many years. How many would it be? 20, 30 years now. You can get a bit locked into a situation where you're talking to people that have a similar perspective to you. I mean, the same with everything in life, really. And all that does is kind of make the furrow you're ploughing a bit deeper so you can't see out the side. So occasionally you need someone to just pull you out and say, we have a coffee together, we're going to do a commission together. And you get a very different perspective. So you lose some of the sort of the historical baggage that comes with being an expert in a field. I hate the term expert, but I always think expertise is sort of associated with putting on blinkers, to be honest.
You're listening to Synergies, where the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts. And I'm talking to Hugh Montgomery, a professor of intensive care medicine at UCL, and Peter Cox, a professor of climate system dynamics at the University of Exeter. So, Hugh, How can a change in behaviour relating to the climate produce immediate health benefits?
Well, there are some very simple ones. If you look at the smallest level, the individual level, we could look at, for instance, diet. So as a white middle-aged male, increasingly late middle-aged male in Britain, the most likely thing to kill me now is bowel cancer. And the commonest driver of bowel cancer in white middle-aged males is red meat and saturated fat consumption. So if I knock those on the head and move to a largely vegetable-based diet, my risk of bowel cancer plummets. And that's very good for me. It's good for my wife and my children. And it's good for the society that allows me to carry on working, paying my taxes and so forth. It also happens that cows belching methane are major contributors to greenhouse gas emissions. And that by moving away to a diet away from red meat, I happen to have reduced one driver to climate change, which is promoting the use of cows for dairy products and for red meat consumption whilst also improving my health.
That's good to hear that substantiated, I have to say, because I always believed that was rather an urban myth about methane and cows. I was never sure about that.
It's a big deal, and there are many other environmental reasons why moving to a more vegetable-based diet would be useful. And there are others as well, which is that if, you know, if I choose to drive to work, lots of particulate pollution coming out the back end of my car, that's meaning that asthma rates go up, lung cancer rates go up, and these particulates are very bad for lung health and respiratory disease. Stroke rates go up, heart attack rates go up for everyone else. It also happens to drive climate change because of the nitrogen oxides and so forth coming out the back of the exhaust pipe, as well as the carbon dioxide. It's also bad for me because being sedentary is bad as a particular, again, a white middle-aged male for my coronary and cardiovascular risk. If I walk or cycle to work, I'm no longer damaging the health of other people with particulates. I'm not damaging my own through those particulates. I'm improving the climate, and I'm also improving my cardiovascular health by exercising. And these are not small changes.
Peter, when you bring together climate scientists and medical health professionals, it seems like a good fit. But what happens when you bring economics or politics into this picture?
That often happens, of course, in climate science. It's really not sitting in a vacuum because it's very much connected to what we do about environmental sustainability, and that's connected to economics and politics. So climate science is often quite a difficult and challenging place to be, because the way we operate as scientists is that we kind of have the equivalent of a Hippocratic oath, I suppose, that we will agree that where we see some data and we've analysed it, we'll agree what the truth is. But politics doesn't really work like that. You know, politics, you basically take your position, a bit like you do in law, and then you defend it. And so whenever scientists and politicians meet, there's a kind of disconnect where we're using different rules, and both are ways to get the truth. Doctors sort of sit between the two of these, as far as I can see. They are able to rotate, a bit like polarisation, and that's helpful because sometimes they're talking to funders, and sometimes they're talking to physicians that are basically pure scientists. So that's been a very useful thing as well, the ability to sort of slide from one way of thinking, advocacy, to objective science, for want of a better word.
So, Hugh, Peter has talked quite candidly about his worry about working with you. What did you learn from working with him and his approach?
Well, an enormous amount, because, I mean, that is the great advantage here, that it was Peter and economists and people who work in policy, and these are not spheres in which I work. And it's always a pleasure to work with experts in other spheres when you're working towards one common goal. So it's a real joy. I learned an awful lot about climate physics, about how modelling is done, where the flaws were before. Peter was pointing out this issue before, that he and I and many others had all talked about global mean averages across sea, land and snow caps. And, you know, when you look at it, you suddenly do think, well, you know, and it was Peter's idea, not ours. Peter came back and just said, hang on just a minute, guys, we've been looking at this the wrong way. And you go, oh, you're right, actually. It's rather embarrassing. I think one also gets a much clearer view. I don't know what Peter thinks, but I thought working with some of the policy folk and the economists was absolutely fascinating for me as well, about how policy is created, not just the politics of it, but how policy is created and how it is influenced. And we did go out of our way to try to make sure that the evidence we produced was accessible to and understood by policymakers. That was a very important part of this process, learning how to do that.
So, do you both see yourselves on the same side?
That's a leading question.
Well, yeah,
I'm not sure I could agree with that.
Right outside 5 minutes. Yeah, I think we are. And without data coming from people like Peter, we can't. You know, our views about health impacts are based about on what Peter and his colleagues are able to tell us. But without those sorts of data being provided to us, we're dead in the water, really. So I think we're completely on the same side.
Yeah, well, we're certainly on the same side in terms of recognising the importance of the problem, right?
Yeah.
And recognition of that importance is heightened by talking to people like Hugh, who have a different perspective on it. So I don't think it's...
Yeah,
we've We've found common ground.
Yeah.
Professors Hugh Montgomery and Peter Cox, thank you both for sharing your experience of bringing together two very different disciplines for this edition of Synergies Podcast.